As promised, first of two chances to win a pair of tickets to Wiz Khalifa or Sean Paul. Right now on Grant and Danny. We got a pair for you if you're caller 10 at 800-636-1067. It's the Good Vibes Only Tour. You don't know who the special guest is going to be.
It's DaBaby.
DaBaby with a baby in the back.
It's not the baby.
Ford Festiva. Baby in the back. July 25th, Jiffy Lube Live. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. We got the Beltway Blitz coming your way right now. We're going to cover the teams in town you care the most about, including the NFL and the Commanders. Let's start off with a quick update on your Washington Nationals. A lot going on with the Nats, and our guy at Mark Zuckerman of MassinSports.com can break it all down. Mark, I actually want to go off the beaten path a little bit in terms of the series win over the Reds. Mackenzie Gore, trade deadline coming up. I actually would absolutely be shopping him. 2 years of control left. I think he's on the first plane out of here when he hits free agency as a Boris-advised player who, you know, has no real ties to D.C. Do you think they're going to try to trade him if they can get a package, or will that not really ramp up until this offseason, if at all?
I don't think they're shopping him, for sure. Now, if other GMs call Mike DiBartolo and say, hey, here's an offer, and it's so overwhelming that he can't say no to it, then I think you consider that. But the sense I get, and I take him at his word when he told us this, that none of young core players are, in his mind, on the block right now. And it's a matter more of you'd have to get something major, major in return. And I get what you're saying about the fact that you may only have a couple more years of him anyways, and if this team isn't ready to win by then, or even if it is, you're going to lose him eventually. But you trade Mackenzie Gore after everything else you've gone through right now, that's a tough sell to your fan base from what's been going on here over the last year and certainly, you know, 4 or 5 years now. So if you do that, you better be able to make that clear that this is not just in the best long-term interest, but that this is actually going to help you win in the short term as well.
So I totally agree with you that it would be a terrible thing to do in the short term from a business standpoint. You could add it to the list, by the way. So is apathy, not adding players, and a lot of the other decisions that they've made or haven't made over an extended period of time. And you would have people that check out, you know, people that just say that's the straw that broke my back or whatever. My point is, a lot of people said that with Soto, and I know you're not getting a Soto return, but they would actually get a hell of a return for Mackenzie Gore, who I view as basically a rental at this point. And if you trade him with three postseasons to go instead of two, as we saw with Soto, it's a substantially different, better return. I think you could get, you know, a couple of pieces that could be in the rotation sometime next year as part of a package, potentially with the right organization. And in the same way the Soto deal was a step back for a couple of steps forward, they don't really have assets like that. Now, I'm not the guy that's like, I'm not the A's. I'm not trying to just trade everybody with 2 years of control left. But my personal belief, speculation, informed speculation, whatever you want to call it, is that this guy's not re-signing here. And so it goes back to my Soto adage of the best time to trade him is never, and the second best time is right now.
Yeah, and there's absolutely baseball logic in what you're saying. Again, if you can get something that is so clearly worth it and you can convince everyone this is going to make your team better, give you a better chance of winning, you know, even in the next year or two, not just 3-4 years down the road, then I think you consider it. But you also got to remember, if you're Mike DiBartolo, you don't know if you have this job beyond this year. So you're doing things to try to help set the organization up in the long run. But ultimately, how do we know if somebody else does get that job, whether they would want Mackenzie Gore on their team or not? And so it does make it tricky when you start talking about trading away guys who have more than just a year or maybe a year and a half of control left.
So who is going to be on the move? And I guess kind of by that same logical extension, Mark, wouldn't that be a tougher sell for a short-term season where they're going to lose 90-some games? I mean, I guess at some point you got to make a move for the future of the ball club, right, for some of these short-term guys?
Sure. No, of course. And I think the guys who are going to be free agents at the end of the year, those are the obvious ones, and I'd be surprised if they don't move them all, or at least don't look to move them all, depending on what they get offered. So that's Josh Bell, who thankfully has finally started to hit quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's going to help. Michael Soroka, who we've talked about, like the underlying numbers haven't been great, but the peripheral numbers suggest that he's better than that, and there could be a team out there that sees it. Kyle Finnegan has not helped his cause if he wants to be traded with his performances here in the last few weeks. But I think regardless, a closer who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, you look to move him anyways. And then, you know, the types of like Ahmed Rosario, Paul DeJong, Andrew Chafin. Now, I don't think you're getting a ton in return for any of these guys because that's the way it works now with rental players. But it is the smart move to make once you concede that you're not winning this year for guys who are going to be free agents anyways.
What about Nathaniel Lowe? I find
that's
him interesting because the way I always heard it was there was a little bit of friction, maybe. Maybe that's too strong of a word. But like the real numbers guys in the front office didn't love that trade as much as, say, the baseball guys like Mike Rizzo. Well, Rizzo's out, and now the numbers guys are kind of running the thing. I think it's more likely that they trade him even with a year of control next year than maybe 2 months ago. What do you make of that?
I think he is the one who is under control beyond this year that you definitely would be making calls on, not just waiting to hear from other people. The issue there, I mean, look, as you know, you could spend 45 minutes deciding whether or not you think Nathaniel Lowe's had a good season.
It has happened before.
Yes. He's still on pace for 25 and 100, and that's fantastic production that they're just not getting from hardly anybody else. He also has a sub-700 OPS, which is not good for a first baseman. And I think the biggest thing is that the defense has not really been as advertised. This is a former Gold Glove winner, and it just hasn't been what we've seen from him. So given all that and the fact that in arbitration he's probably going to make $13, $14 million next year, if you don't believe he's worth that, then yes, I think you do look to trade him now and see what you can get in return. Now, we talk about it's a hard sell for people. You traded away 5 years of a fairly quality reliever in Robert Garcia, and you're maybe only get 4 months of Nathaniel Lowe in return. So you better get something for him. This can't just be we're dumping him. It's got to be somebody that's going to make a difference for you believe, down the road. But I think that is one to consider. And then you are looking for a first baseman again next year. So if there is a thought that he could still be your guy next year and you're willing to pay him $13, $14 million, then you don't have to make that move. But if you can get something for him and you're not sure that he really is what you thought he was going to be, then, yeah, you look to do that right now.
Mark, thank you as always, man. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Hit that NFL sounder, please. Our pal Mike Jones of The Athletic joins us to talk about the National Football League. Mike, big picture, the CBA is not very well set up for players to hold out and kind of win those negotiations. Just kind of give me your general thoughts on that.
Yeah, and it's something that there was kind of some frustration on the players' part when they got this new CBA, that this took away a little bit of a leverage ploy for them. I mean, you can still hold out. It just is a matter of how much of a fine you're willing to take on. And then, you know, sometimes the agent's able to negotiate and a team will waive the fine. But now that it's in the CBA, it's kind of harder. And, that's why you see more guys hold in instead of hold out. But we're seeing Terry McLaurin is staying away. And, again, this is basically what he feels like. It's his one little bit of leverage ploy to stay away until they get a deal hammered out.
Hey, you've been at Commanders camp, even though you cover the league nationally now, for these first 2 days. What's your big picture outlook for Washington this year?
I think that when you look at the roster, they are going to be better as a team. But is their record going to be better? I'm not so sure. They had, five straight last play victories in a row. I mean, that's kind of hard to do. Now, because you've kind of added some pieces, Deebo Samuel, Laremy Tunsil, Von Miller, are they going to help elevate you enough so you don't need those late game heroics week after week? You would hope so, but there's still, a number of questions. We'll see how it comes together. Questions, in the secondary, is their defensive line really improved? I don't know. But again, it looks like depth-wise, they're better. We're just going to have to see how things play out, how the ball bounces their way.
I kind of forgot that Jacksonville was a team on the rise a couple of years ago. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember they had that comeback win in the postseason against the Chargers, and everyone thought, okay, here comes the ascension of Sunshine Ronnie Bass, a.k.a. Trevor Lawrence. It just hasn't happened. Now Liam Cohen is there. What do you make of the Jags? I kind of forgot about them there in the AFC South.
Yeah, I think that they have the potential to bounce back. They have a young, innovative coach. They've got what they're doing is kind of interesting. They have a head coach, an offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, general manager, who all have never had their jobs before. They are first-time guys across the board. But when I asked Liam Cohen, like, why is this, why would you do this instead of try to get some veterans to lean on? He said, I want hunger. I want guys who are trying to prove something. And look, they had such a dysfunctional situation under Urban Meyer, and Doug Peterson came in and brought some professionalism, and they showed promise. And then it was like, they just stopped. They didn't keep evolving. They didn't look to continue to grow. It almost felt like Doug Peterson was kind of complacent. He got a Super Bowl win. He got, you know, a turnaround, a playoff appearance out of the Jaguars, and just was content to stay the way they are. Well, now they have guys who are unproven but super hungry. They have a roster that does have some talent. You've got a quality quarterback. He just needs some guidance. Now you've got Travis Hunter, who could be one of the most exciting and intriguing players in the league. They've got some pieces at running back, wide receiver, got some quality guys on defense. Maybe they just needed a fresh approach to be able to get things done. So it's going to be an interesting situation because their division isn't out of reach. It's not just the Texans and nobody else. You know, I think that maybe they could possibly challenge them.
Florham Park today, Jets camp. Justin Fields came off. Originally, it was reported as a lower leg injury, and he was carted off, and I think everyone assumed the worst. Turns out it's not that big of a deal, maybe. He was day-to-day, dislocated toe. They dodged a bullet.
Right. Yeah, you know, and look, we'll see. This is going to be a work in progress. It's not like the cover's completely bare. They had a quality defense. They have just been such a dysfunctional mess. Now, look, they're going to really have to lean into the running game, which is probably a good thing. Ease pressure on Justin Fields. He's also built to run. You know, they've got some pieces on defense. I like that, yes, Aaron Glenn is a defensive-minded head coach, but he's got Steve Wilks there, who's a great defensive mind. So that way he can trust him to work with the defense, and Aaron Glenn can kind of have the big picture view and really kind of make sure that everything across the board is running the way that he wants. They've got something to work with, but again, it could take a while just to build this thing and get it back on track the right way.
Mike, the other New York team, I've got in my mind, you know, we do this based on last year, and we always do that, looking back at the year before, we sort of a lot of times naively assume that things will be kind of the same or play out similarly. But in my mind, I have the Giants categorized as a terrible team that's going to pick in the top five again. Like, that's where they are. Is there a chance that's not the case? I'm not saying good playoffs or otherwise, but is there a chance that they're actually okay, that some of these things actually work out, question mark?
I don't know, man. I really struggle with them as well. Abdul Carter is promising. Malik Nabers is promising. But you got Russell Wilson, who, I don't know. Brian Daboll's creative mind, but I don't know. Can you mask enough? Do you have enough of quality offensive line and a run game to keep from putting too much on Russell Wilson now that he's, you know, over the hill? I just don't know. I feel like that team still has a ways to go talent-wise to be the point where they're okay. When you look at the other teams in the division, still, you know, Philadelphia is the king. Washington's, you know, on the rise. Dallas, we'll see what happens with them. But the Giants still feel like they're a long way away from threatening those teams.
Mike, I don't know if you grew up a wrestling fan or not, but when you hear the name Hulk Hogan from your childhood, what comes to mind?
No, I mean, that was like the wrestler that, you know, I think when you're coming up our age, that he was, you know, like, I guess this generation, or I don't know who's like the star right now, but, you know, the previous generation was The Rock, you know, the Hulk Hogan was the guy. And I think probably all time, maybe the most popular one. I don't think that wrestling would be as big as it is now if it wasn't for him. So yeah, just, you know, sad. You know, just that we're losing another icon because that's definitely what he was.
Dude, a couple in a few days here. I can't believe he was 71 years old. But, yeah. You're in that wheelhouse age kind of sandwich between me and Danny where I assumed you had plenty of memories.
Yep.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
All right, see you guys.
Look who we found wandering around the streets of the Navy Yard. We looked out the window and stuck to the flagpole with his tongue.
What's this guy doing?
It was hot out there.
How did your tongue get frozen to the flagpole?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I started to lick the flagpole.
What the heck are you doing in the Navy?
Well, I was just looking for, you know, some humidity. Does anybody know where I can find some?
Yeah. Rainy old buddy, yeah. Old pal.
Hi. How are you?
No longer with us.
Yeah, man.
What's your Hulk Hogan memory, your one seed?
My one seed ultimately was him turning bad at Bash at the Beach in NWO, or turning into NWO with Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, July 7th, I believe it was, 1996.
That has to be one of the great heel turns ever.
I mean, it was the best
heel turn.
The best heel turn, because nobody expected it. When he came out in red and yellow and his traditional Hulkamania garb, and he comes walking down the road, everybody thinks he's coming to help Randy Macho Man Savage, and I think Lex Luger, and for him to just drop the leg drop and for the crowd to go as nuts as they did, and for him to then,
they're throwing stuff in the ring. God. Here,
how old were you for that, Rainey?
96, so I was 22.
Were you watching at college? I was with buddies. Buffalo State University.
No. I think I was living in Buffalo at the time, but I was postgraduate. So check this out. I went to Bash at the Beach the next year in Daytona, where he teamed up with, I think it was Dennis Rodman. And it was against, I forget who the hell it was against, Carl Malone and somebody else. Maybe Lex Luger.
I actually remember that.
Yeah. So I went the next year. Of course, I'm always a year off.
Yeah, was that the year Rodman left the finals, by the way, to go do that?
I don't know.
Slashed.
Listen, Hulk Hogan, very complicated legacy, obviously, as we all know. I think, you know, people have said it best today. When I said, you know, I think we can celebrate the entertainer, the icon, the global impact that he had as a professional wrestler, as an actor, as an entertainer, and also separate that, but acknowledge the fact that he, you know, did some not very nice things and some awful things in his post-wrestling career as he got older, and really, really, really struggled to, I think, be what most people would identify as a good human being. I don't want to trash him, being that he just passed away, but I think you're not doing your job if you don't acknowledge the very complicated legacy that he left behind. But that doesn't mean he didn't have an enormous impact, a global impact, bigger than most movie stars, bigger than most
musicians.
That's what
I was trying to quantify. Yeah. I mean, to me, the seminal deal is him, and you mentioned Macho Man, the Mega Powers.
Yeah.
Managed by Miss Elizabeth. Yeah. And then the culmination where Macho Man wouldn't take the tag.
On Saturday night's main event.
I mean, the level of a heartbreak, like actual tears. I'm sitting there like this contrived storyline that, and I even knew at that point that it wasn't real in the sense that, like, you know, when they're still taking bumps, I get that it's difficult, athleticism, whole nine. But even as I'm 8 or 9 year old kid, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
Think about this thing. And moving to that
it was
kind
on
of emotion.
NBC.
Yes.
I mean, it was on NBC.
Oh, WNBC.
WNBC.
Do it just like I'm. It's WNBC.
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 Okay. All right, I got it. That brings me back to my Ute. But think about this from an in-ring perspective, right? He wasn't the best wrestler playing it. For God's sakes, he had a leg drop.
Not even close.
That sucked, right? But think about body slamming.
That wasn't his finisher, was it?
Yes,
it
was.
Oh, that's a nubby finisher.
Oh, it absolutely was. But remember what Hulk Hogan would do, right? You'd be punching him, boom, 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 boom. And then he'd just tense up and he'd start to shake, right? Then he remembers
the shake.
And he'd start to shake.
And then the other guy's going, no, I'm sorry.
And then he'd just start, you know, of course, then the overhead right would come, he'd block it. Another overhead right would come, a body blow, and he'd block that. And then Hulk Hogan would just start tearing. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. WrestleMania 3, Pontiac 3. Silverdome, which is no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
Body slamming, 7'6", 7'5", whatever it was.
525 pounds,
whatever it was. Andre the Giant. I just watched the video clip of it just a little while ago. I mean, just amazing.
By the way, February 5th, 88. American television viewership record for wrestling.
Yeah, 33 million, right?
33 million. 15 share.
Yeah.
15% of the people.
Of course, that's when television ratings matter, boys.
Indeed.
Mm. I mean, we know they don't matter elsewhere.
Rainey, I'm just glad you were in the Navy Yard.
Yes,
today.
I'm glad.
We lucked out.
You know, I was in Ashburn today, too, and you wouldn't buy me breakfast.
I saw you out there.
Yeah. You wouldn't buy me breakfast.
Why didn't you buy me breakfast, man?
Didn't know I was supposed to. Walked into the practice. He's like, heard you were buying breakfast. Didn't know that. You got to tell me these things. I got no problem stopping and getting you breakfast.
I told you yesterday.
It only took me an hour
phone.
To get out there. I might as well have made it an hour 15.
Yeah, add another 20 minutes.
I told you yesterday on the phone that you were supposed to bring breakfast, being that you didn't want to go to lunch with me because you said you had a busy schedule or something that included the Nationals getting shut out on
four
hits.
There was a lot going on. I had to go see one of their four hits.
Yeah.
We have not talked at all about Terry McLaurin today, and really in a couple days. Good for the Commanders. There's been enough going on with the stadium and Von Miller and trotting out some of the new faces at press conference that Terry, at least for 48 hours, it hasn't been the biggest story just yet. Let's get into whether or not there's some way. Is there a way to convince anybody that this could actually be a benefit, as long as he's back before the season starts, that he's not practicing? I'll get into that next on The Fan. Brooke Pinto, D.C. City Council, has been pro stadium from day one. She'll be on the show with us at 5. There is an agreement between the chairman, Phil Mendelson, and the Commanders that apparently is different than an agreement between the City Council to say yes and the Commanders. So the vote's going to be on the 1st. We'll ask her if she thinks there's enough votes to get this thing done in a week. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Still no Terry McLaurin. Hold out day 2. This is the old Fantana Panda Watch. Thus far, no Terry.
No Terry.
Practice number 3 tomorrow. Silver Linings playbook here. Okay, I'm going full Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, J-Law.
Mm-hmm.
Big J-Law guy, by the way. Wonderful actress.
She actually is really good at acting.
She's a
really good actress.
Award-winning actress.
Yes.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Big J-Law guy.
Mm-hmm.
Terry McLaurin not being there for several practices, couple of weeks, whatever it ends up being. As long as he comes back at the end of camp, or by the end of camp, and plays in the regular season. Healthy, fresh, no wear and tear, and maybe most importantly, lots of extra reps for other guys. Terry McLaurin does not need the reps. Terry McLaurin does not really need to be on the field. Now, somebody might convince me or say, yeah, but he needs to be out there, the timing with Jaden Daniels, you don't want a slow start to the season. I'm saying, assuming he comes back with a couple weeks left, they can get on the same page and be ready to go by week 1, game 1, New York Giants at Northwest Stadium, early September. Is there something to be said for, like, I was talking to Luke McCaffrey today coming off the field.
Uh-huh.
I was like, hey, have you talked to Terry? He's, oh, yeah, we text. We talk all the time. He's my mentor. He said, I've talked to him recently. I was like, you getting more reps? Are you getting to do more just because he's not here? And he's like, yeah, we all have to do a little bit more, you know, in terms of the actual workload. So everyone bumps up the depth chart a little bit, basically. Is there something to that, that if McCaffrey benefits and maybe Debo does a little bit more, who's in his first year with this group and Cliff Kingsbury, that in some way this ends up being a positive when we look back if the contract is signed and he's delivered?
To a point. I mean, I still think that when it gets too late, and I don't know what the line of demarcation is, it's going to vary per player. There are some guys that, like, I remember there was once Ryan Zimmerman rolled back from being on the disabled list, like no rehab assignment, went like 2 for 4 in his first game. You're like, it's supposed to be hard with timing. It's supposed to be hard, but some guys can roll out of bed and do it. Other guys require a month to get their timing back and, you know, go through the rigors of getting through a day-to-day and, you know, whatever. So I don't know exactly how long Terry McLaurin needs to be both up to speed, the physical wind and condition, he'll be fine. He works really hard, and that's part of what makes him special, why he deserves to be paid. But I don't know how many football reps he needs to be ready to be his maximum self. I don't know if we have a soft tissue injury in the first week of the season. Was that because he wasn't at training camp? Was that because he wasn't anywhere? We'll never know, but that's the kind of thing I worry about. So at a certain point, a couple of weeks for other guys, the underlings, so to speak, the understudies, the twos, to get more reps, I think that's probably good.
Yeah, I do too. And that's my caveat, is that he's got to come back at a reasonable point. And just looking at the holdout, it stands to reason this thing's not going a month, probably. Financially, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I think you said this to Mike Jones of The Athletic when he was on the show just a bit ago. The CBA just doesn't really give players the ability to hold out. Very rarely, it almost never happens. It has, but very rarely does someone pull like a Chris Jones of the Chiefs a couple years ago, where they're practicing ahead of the game 1 opener that they had on Thursday Night Football as a champion against the Lions, unfurling a banner before he finally agreed to show up and to sign a new contract, where he sat through preseason games, it's not $50,000. You're getting into the hundreds of thousands of dollars range when you're still not back and the preseason games are rolling. And we're, you know, 2 weeks away from that at this point. So I'm saying, I guess, that I think there's a two-week window where maybe he doesn't show. But when they start playing exhibition games, I don't know if it's a hold-in or not, but I think he will be back. I would be shocked if he's not there in the middle of August. It just, it defies what we see around the league. That would be one of the most acrimonious holdouts we've seen. Right. It'd be top five over the last 10 years if he's still not there in the middle of August. It doesn't happen.
It would let you know that this is more than just the regular lip service, right? And again, I'm not trivializing anything. He's trying to get as much money as possible. The team's trying to do the opposite. It's a very real push and pull. But sometimes it's just what you have to say versus, no, this is so super real. In other words, Brandon Ayuk is online for the world to see, telling everyone I'd never want to play there. I'm FaceTime with my buddy Jaden Daniels, and we'll post that. I want to play for you. I don't ever want to deal with these guys again. Played for the 49ers. Is under contract with the 49ers. You've seen all the people that say a lot of things in public trying to exercise their leverage until the contract comes. It would mean that that's more than just regular old rhetoric. It would mean it's more than just the thing you're saying to try to increase your leverage, and it really is next-level animus to me if he's not back by the time the games are taking place. Talking about preseason games.
Yeah, I feel like we're already in the 90th percentile of anger because 89% of the time or whatever, you don't hold out. Like, Micah Parsons wants a new deal right now and is mad he doesn't have one. Guess where Micah Parsons is?
He's there, yeah.
You got two guys in the league, to my knowledge. Am I forgetting anybody? But it's Trey Hendrickson and Terry McLaurin. Is there anybody else that's actually not at training camp? I mean, think about it that way, if I'm right about that.
Right.
Trey Hendrickson, who called his coach a liar this offseason.
Yeah.
Trey Hendrickson, who called the team out and basically made fun of them for not being professional, joking about them being one of the misfit organizations in the league and how they handle things. That guy and Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, so like James Cook, for example, is like,
he's there.
Yeah, he said, like, they're going to pay. I can't believe they're not paying what I'm worth. I'm upset. He's at training camp.
Well, he's one of the guys, too, that threatened at different points in the offseason that he wouldn't show up.
Right.
Guess what he did? When it came time to either accept a fine every single day and not work or be there, he decided not to be there. So we're already way further down the road than I think a lot of people thought we would get in this game of chicken. Most people thought Terry McLaurin would have peeled off already. He's still driving right at the commander. So I'm stunned by that. Frankly, admire is not the right word, but I give him credit for sticking to his guns here. I don't know how much longer I do that before the tone shifts to, all right, brother, let's get to work. Football season's coming. You got 1 year of contract left. Because that's one of the things that, like, my dad does this kind of thing all the time. He is a believer in, like, he is ingrained in us. We're workers. Like, I don't know that we'll be the most talented at anything, but we're going to outwork everybody around us, and I think that comes from my father. But his thing is, I guarantee it, I haven't talked to him about this, but he's got a year left on his contract. He should be at work.
Yeah.
You've signed a contract. Now, I would say that's not exactly how it works in the NFL. It's not quite the same because this is how he gets his next contract. But when it's time for those games to start being played and you are under contract, I'm team Dennis Paulson all of a sudden.
Yeah, and this is, like, my point yesterday.
I'm paying you to be there, brother.
Where I go, there's a certain point in time where it goes from, hey, man, I got sympathy, empathy, whatever, I'm on everyone's side here, to I now look at my watch going, okay, dude, you're now affecting things negatively. I no longer am supporting your fight to get more money. You're under contract. It's time to fulfill that contract. I'm nowhere near there yet. I don't know what the drop dead date is for me, but it's a ways down the road. But so was today a few months ago where it seemed like, it'll get done. And it hasn't yet.
Let's go to Connor, who is apparently in Cottage City, which I've never heard of. What's Cottage City?
I'll pay you $100 if you could tell me where it is. Just over the border in PG County from the D.C. line. Lovely.
Really?
Come
it's
on
like
out.
10 minutes from where I am right now, and I've
no
never heard
way.
Of it.
It's like in between Bladensburg and Mount Rainier. It's like a quarter of a millimeter on the map right now that I'm looking at.
What is that? Like a nine-house community? How specific is Cottage City?
Look at these little red dots, Grant. Look.
Significant enough to have its own police force.
See the little red outline?
That's Cottage.
That's like seven city blocks.
It's a city. Who knew?
How about that?
All right, Connor, in Cottage City. There's a lot of C's in there. What do you think?
Third time caller. On the empathy standpoint, like, my perspective is, like, yes, Terry is the guy you need to have for the team culture perspective, performance perspective. But you also have to, like, just be on the other side of the table, right? So when you think of the new regime in terms of management, this is a first occurrence for them. They need to set the precedent. How are they going to handle negotiations 2-3 years from now? And I think holding the line, despite the challenges for the fan base, the team culture, and, you know, when do we get to that breaking point of, like, enough is enough, Terry? But they are also in a very difficult position of, like, holding the line of the contract.
Understood, but what precedent are they setting? I mean, to me, right now, the precedent they're setting would be that, based on what we know, if the reporting's correct, they haven't offered Terry McLaurin market. And I guess the precedent would be the guy that has meant the most to the organization over an extended period of time isn't being taken care of. Like, what other precedent are they setting exactly? Just that they play hardball?
Well, I mean, hardball would be one take. Another take would just be, like, not playing it appropriately. So far, I think they've made great decisions. Hopefully they do not deviate from that in the future. But
appreciate you, buddy. Thanks, buddy. It's a little noisy. But
Cottage City's very busy. It's bustling.
It sounds like there's a motorcycle in Cottage City right now, or maybe he was calling from one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good phone call. Thank you. We appreciate it. Here's the question I want to circle back to next, and we can take some calls on this next. 800-636-1067 is the number. So, Danny, you said, I don't know when it's too late to be a positive. Like, if I'm spinning this into, there's actually a week or two here where just extra reps for a lot of guys who might need them. McLaurin doing less in training camp, not pulling anything, not being sore or tired. He is almost 30. It's not like he's 50. But a little bit less work in the heat of the summer is probably not going to kill him. He'll show back up. He'll be ready to go in plenty of time. When does that end? How much longer can you sell this as a positive from that standpoint before you go, okay, now this is clearly a negative? I'm not talking about the distraction angle, which is already a negative, right, substantially. I'm not talking about the precedent being set, which you can make the case is already a negative for the organization. But just from a football roster standpoint, if it's a decent thing, probably a good thing to get guys like Luke McCaffrey more work right now that McLaurin may not need, when does that change? 800-636-1067. Grant and Danny will talk to Brooke Pinto of the D.C. City Council at 5. Commanders running back Jacory Kroski-Merritt, they drafted in the 7th round. Personable, engaging, young guy. I really liked my conversation with him. You'll hear it at 5:45. I caught up with him after practice, just off the field. Day 2 today out in Ashburn. Still no Terry McLaurin. So, Danny, take your best guess here at, we're going to sell this as a positive for the development of other players and getting guys reps that need them. KJ Osborne, Michael Gallup, those types of veterans that are trying to make the team. You get a better look at them in these practices, maybe in preseason games if McLaurin doesn't show. Deebo Samuel's learning the offense. Can't hurt to have him out there as long as he stays healthy. And then the young guys, I think, especially, right? Any of the roster hopefuls, the more they're on the grass, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about a guy like Luke McCaffrey, who I talked to about this today, and he said, yeah, I do get more run and more chances with the first, second team, what have you. But if we're saying, okay, there's the positive of it, for right now, that's fine. For a week, for 2 weeks, maybe.
Right.
When does that no longer matter at all? Because it's not just a negative as a distraction. It's now a negative from a football standpoint. Because against the Giants, you need McLaurin ready to go. 9 targets, 7 catches, 96 yards, and a touchdown.
For me, it's that second preseason game. That Monday, August 18th. I could sort of look the other way for a guy that has put in a lot of work and is going to miss some practices and not as many reps and not, you know, do everything. He's done it before. He'll be fine. He'll get up to speed quickly. This is, you know, it's like riding a bike again for him, or it's like swimming. He's already done it. And now, hey, I had a few extra weeks where other people got to do it. But as long as you have a couple of weeks to me where I can get him into that preseason game, so he probably needs to be there a few days before that, where I can get that dress rehearsal, get the look, get the ramp up of the team coming together, not necessarily game planning, but you know, going through the exercise of playing a football game. The closest we've got to a dress rehearsal is that second preseason game of 3, Monday Night Football style against the Bengals. If he's not there then doing it, it's now we're past like, hey, there's some positives. You know, Jalen Lane gets to run a couple of routes. It's now, okay, dude, you've made your point. You're under contract. Let's go.
Here's the number that I was talking about for games. $861,111 if he misses a preseason game. $50K a day for missing practice.
Right.
But if he's not there because he's holding out and he misses a preseason game, he loses $861,000.
Can you imagine having enough to lose that?
Well, I mean, as I said, he's made, well, I don't remember what the number I tallied up was the other day, but 40-some million over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So he won't notice that necessarily.
You know, I would notice it. You're the
most,
Sam.
Can you imagine?
No.
Deciding not to accept nearly $1 million just because you want to send a little message about how happy you are. That would be nice. Let's go to Sean in Falls Church. Sean, what is that line of in the sand for you, that date where you go, okay, this is no longer fun that we get to get some guys reps?
So for me, thanks again for taking my call. I think it's actually going to be after the vote for the stadium. The two big things this offseason have been the stadium and Terry. And all of our focus has been on one or the other, kind of divided. Stadium, it sounds like things are going to be across that finish line, across the goal line next Friday. So I'm thinking 2-3 days, maybe a news or two a news cycle after that. All the focus is going to be back on Terry right before that first game. I think that's when the proverbial poop hits fan.
That's a good call. He was the story the day before camp, which was the press conference day for Peters.
Uh-huh.
Day one of camp, there was enough other stuff going on that they sent Jaden to the podium. Dan Quinn spoke. There's a Cosme update where there's a little bit of distraction. You can kind of dilute the water a little bit. Today was Von Miller day. And again, it's day two of training camp. There wasn't a whole lot in the way of Terry coverage. But those things are going to pop up. They're going to be huge spikes where it's a little bit quiet and all of a sudden people go, oh, wait a second. The best player on the team is still not here. Not named Jaden Daniels, I guess. Reggie's in D.C. What's up, Reggie? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, buddy.
You know what, man? He need to be in there now. And I'm going to tell you why, because we've seen this with Brandon Ayuk last year. The longer you wait, especially as a wide receiver, he got hurt. I forgot what he pulled, whatever he tore. But the cuts and what you need to do as a wide receiver. So I guess the cutoff for me is probably by next Friday. It for me, he needs to be in there now. Grant, I kind of like what your take was earlier. I think you minimized it because you were talking about how everybody kind of, you know, raises up on the depth chart. And if this was last year, I would be screaming my head off because I'm like, we need him now. With Jaden, with the second year,
right?
I trust my quarterback to be able to, again, would you like him there? Absolutely. Do you want him there? Absolutely. I hate the word need because I trust my quarterback in the second year of the offense being even more comfortable, being able to, again, he's going to have a Debo weapons and hopefully, you know, some of your second year, you know, players step up. You never know where you may find a Puka Nacua. You never know where you may find a Amara Ross St. Brown. I keep hearing this guy Brooks. So I asked one of my Louisville buddies.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now about that kid has made a million plays in 2 days. And it's 11 on 11 without pads. And it's not quite football yet. But, I mean, the number of times I've looked down at my roster and I go, 16. Wow, Ja'Cory Brooks, college free agent. This dude has been, I don't keep the stats because stats in training camp are beyond silly. But nobody's been targeted more or caught more passes in 11s. Than Ja'Cory Brooks from Louisville. Appreciate the call. Definitely number 16, a guy to be, you know, monitoring during the preseason. Early call right now. I'm just telling you, there's going to be your preseason.
Here's your preseason hero. Yeah, here's your Marco Mitchell.
Who was the guy the last couple of years that like made the team at wide receiver, who caught a couple touchdowns in the final game to like force his way onto the roster? Not Bryson Tremaine, although you could say him too. There was a wide receiver who was on the 53-man roster for the whole year 2 seasons ago that never played.
That's going to kill
84
me.
Or 86 or something. It doesn't matter. Anyway, this year...
Byron Pringle?
It's going to be him. No, Byron Pringle played all the time.
Mitchell Tinsley?
Yes, that's him. Penn State. Mitchell
Come
Tinsley.
Come on! All right, it's all for me. You guys have been great.
He'll be this year's Mitchell Tinsley. But anyway, it's a good phone call. We appreciate you. We got to get ready for Brooke Pinto. She's going to be on the line with us at the top of the hour. She has been pro stadium all along. We need to know, Are there enough yes votes right now to get this deal passed in 1 week? We're going to ask her that as soon as we return on the Fan. We've also got tickets to see Wiz Khalifa. You can win in about 5 minutes.